you, everyone, and welcome to BBS Radio and Miracle Hour with John Campbell, and I wish you all a wonderful 2008. I'm afraid I wasn't with you on New Year's Eve. But anyway, I want to wish you a great 2008. I think it's going to be an amazing year ahead. And, yeah, this evening I've got a very interesting guest for you all tonight. And this is an amazing lady who I met probably 5 or 6 years ago, and maybe a little bit more, I don't know. And how it came about was I was at a gathering of people up in London, and it was like one of these money things, you know, one of these kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, it wasn't multi-level marketing, it was more of a thing where you sign people up, and it was, and there was a lot of excitement going around. And anyway, one of the ladies that was arranging this kind of money gifting thing, whatever, I can't remember what it was called now, Hearts maybe something like that. Anyway, she was giving out copies of this book, which was called Money is Love by Barbara Wilder. And I thought, well, that's a cute title, so I took myself a copy of the book, and I read it cover to cover, and I was totally inspired by it. I kind of understood and already knew at a deeper level a lot of the principles, but it was so beautifully written and beautifully put, and I was really inspired, and I just, as is my way, I just picked the phone up and called International Directory Inquiries from England. And I said, right, give me the name of this woman in Boulder, Colorado. And they got me the number. And the next minute I phoned up and I spoke to Barbara on the telephone. And what transpired was that we ended up joining forces, and Barbara came over to England and ran one of her workshops down in Sussex in Florence House. And it was a wonderful gathering, and everyone who was there just had a whale of a time. We had a ball, and it was a lot of fun and a lot of insight. And I started to do a little bit of work with Barbara over the coming months. And then we, you know, as we do, we moved on our journeys. Anyway, I got an email from Barbara, I know, well, one of the newsletters not long ago, and I thought, wow, what a great guest to have on BBS Radio on Miracle Hour. So it's with wonderful, great pleasure that I welcome you, Barbara, and it's so fantastic to have you on the show. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here and talk with you again, John. We did have quite a lovely weekend at Florence House, didn't we?
We did. It was so much fun. And, I mean, you know, without giving away confidentiality, and, you know, we had so much fun, you know, the people, well, what we shared and everything, you know, and it was a wonderful time. And how long ago was it, actually?
It was 2003. It was March of 2003, because it was like 2 weeks before the Iraq war started.
Boy, is that right? I didn't realize that. 2 weeks before. So that's 5 years. So I wasn't far out anyway.
No, we're almost to 6 years, though. We're almost to 6 years in March.
Almost to 6 years, yeah. So do you remember what month it was then?
It was March, because the anti-war demos were going on all over England at the time. And I remember, because after I left you, I went to Durham because my husband was doing some studying there at the university, and we participated in a demo, an anti-war demo. And,
right. Okay.
In Durham, and then we went on up to Edinburgh, and was in another anti-war demo. It was really wonderful.
That was before they found out that the anti-war demos don't work, but pro-peace demos do.
That's right.
Well, that's amazing, Barbara. Nearly 6 years ago, so a lot of water's gone under the bridge. Well, you know what I'd really love you to do is what I get all my guests to do when they come on. Tell me a little bit, if you could, tell our listeners about a little bit about your background, what you used to do, as they say in AA, you know, what I did, what happened, and how it is now. How it was, what happened, how it is now. kind of same kind of deal, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I from California. Originally from California, born and raised in Northern California, and decided I was going to be an actress at a very, very young age, and ended up in Hollywood and did some acting in L.A. and then in New York. And then in about 1975, I entered a mystery school and became a student in a mystery school called Actualism. And I was working in the industry. By that time, I had left acting and was working in production, working on motion pictures, and at the same time, I was deeply, deeply committed to my spiritual path in the School of Actualism, and I studied there for 11 years.
Wow. So you had to put in both camps at that stage, huh?
Exactly. It was really fascinating. Yeah. To be in both places. And my dream at the time was to bring the motion picture industry and the spiritual world together. And I had a dream of, you know, making films and having everybody on the films, come together in meditation first thing every morning before we went to work, and holding everything in the light. And pretty soon, and eventually I got, you know, I got exhausted from living in, with my legs trying to create that, because it wasn't quite time, and I think it's getting to be time. Not quite yet, but, in 1990, I came to England to get married, and I had two amazing spiritual visionary experiences. One was in the Mulberry Rings in Dorchester, where I had a vision of this ancient feminine ceremony. And I saw the ancient dancers and priests and dancing and painting themselves with red paint or blood, and it was extraordinary. And I for the first time I deeply connected to the power of the feminine. And at that point, from that point on, all my work started focusing deeply on the divine feminine and bringing it forth within myself, and then finding how to bring it forth in everything. And out of that, one of the things that came out of that was that I left the movie industry. I left Los Angeles, and I ended up in Boulder, Colorado, and here in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. And
wow.
I began my teaching and healing practices and writing my books, and everything shifted from that point. And when I finally wrote Money is Love, Reconnecting to the Sacred Origins of Money, it was because I had reached this deeper understanding of the divine feminine and how we have to reconnect everything to the divine feminine, so that we can find balance between the divine feminine and the divine masculine. And once we have balance, then everything flows.
Right.
So that's where I am now, and I've written another book called Embracing Your Power, Woman, 11 Steps to Coming of Age at Midlife, which is a spiritual adventure book, and it's a course, actually, that is for midlife women and older to learn how to find their true power, their true feminine power, and then step out into the world as leaders, because we need some new and inspired leadership in the world right now.
Right. So when you actually, it was Los Angeles that you were living with at the time, was it?
Yes, it was.
That was with your husband, Patrick, at the time?
That's right.
Yeah. So was that the time when you just awoke one morning and said you had messages that you had to move and you didn't know where you were going and you just hit the road?
That's right.
I remember that story so well.
Yes, and we were living in this absolutely beautiful home in the Hollywood Hills, and we had just recently moved there. It was really like, you know, everything you'd aspire to when you live in Hollywood. You know, it was it had been a part of the Mulholland Estate, which is, if you're familiar with Mulholland Drive and everything, it's just,
yes.
It was this beautiful place, and my guides had been telling me for several years that because in a past life I had not listened to my higher self, and what had happened is I had I had died in a most horrible way, that and I could have avoided it if I'd listened to my higher self and left the place I was in. My higher self and my guides were saying, now one of these days we're going to tell you that it's time to leave, and you have to leave, or, you know, because you've got to learn and grow this lifetime. And so it was the day after the 1994 earthquake, and I was standing in the shower, and the earth was, you know, shaking about every 20 minutes, and my guides came and said, now is the time to leave. And I called my husband into the bathroom, and I said, it's time to leave. We have to go now. And he was in such shock from the earthquake. I wasn't as bothered because I grew up in California, but he was in deep shock. I was fine. So he said, okay, whatever you want to do. And so my guides told me we had to leave at 6, and it was 2:00 in the afternoon at the time. We packed both of our cars with everything it would take to start a new life in case we didn't come back. And
what were you renting a place now?
We didn't own it, thank goodness. And because it got terribly, terribly damaged in the earthquake. So it's very,
oh, right,
glad.
Okay.
Very glad we didn't own it.
So you were doing a moonlight flip.
Yeah. So there we went.
The earthquake pushed you out.
That's right. But it was really my guides that just said, it's time to go now. The reason I think they told me then was because any other time, my husband, who is a Capricorn, would never have left. You know, he would never have left. And they had told me that I would have to leave no matter what my family wanted. So,
yeah.
You know, so it was interesting that he was in this state of shock, so he came.
And they didn't tell you where to go. That was the part I loved about the story. They just told you to hit the road, didn't they?
That's right.
they let you know when you'd got to where you were going.
Right. Actually, what happened is we drove that night directly to Arizona, where Patrick's parents lived, and stayed there. And then the next day I opened the atlas of the road atlas, and I looked at the whole country, and I just said, okay, where are we going? And it was, and I, all of a sudden, I was just staring at the map. I had no idea where we're going. And there, you know, where the little star was on the map for Denver, it's turned into like a blinking light. It was like a blinking red light.
Wow.
And I went, I guess we're going to Denver. And then we got to Denver, and I didn't like Denver. And our friends we were staying with said, it's okay, Barbara, you want Boulder. And we drove up here to Boulder, and I went, oh, yes. Because Boulder
wow.
is very, very different. So that's the story of how I got to Boulder. And, of course, we gave up everything. We left, you know, our careers and everything and just came here and, you know,
I mean, that's amazing, amazing trust. And, you know, I've heard one or two other people, similar type of stories, you know. I mean, Shirley MacLaine's story is very interesting. I'm sure, you're familiar with that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that takes an amazing amount of trust, you know. And I think the thing that I've struggled with, up until now and still is kind of discerning what messages are coming through guides and what's coming through my ego. You know, that's the challenge I think I have. You know, I'm, you know, get to places where I just don't know what to do and asking for guidance and, you know, and nothing seems to come, you know. So what do you suggest in times like that, Barbara?
Well, sometimes we're not supposed to. We're supposed to just sit still. And when we think we're supposed to get answers, sometimes we're not supposed to get any. The answer is just to be and to be at peace with exactly where we are and allow the direction to come. You know, it's like you can't push the river. You know, sometimes they're just not going to tell us. You know, and what they're telling us by not, or they, and mostly I mean our higher self. I really, you know, we do have other guides and stuff, but it's really our inner self, our inner teacher. Yeah.
The one that knows the full picture.
Exactly.
I guess this is what would be referred to in the Course in Miracles as the Holy Spirit.
Yes. And in my work, we call it either the teacher knower or the immortal being of life that we are.
Yeah. And this is the one that knows the whole picture, right?
That's right. Right. That knows exactly what we came here in this lifetime to do and what we've done in all of our past lifetimes and what the plan is, what the bigger plan for our soul's purpose is, you know, over the whole big picture of eternity and for the picture for this lifetime.
And am I right in thinking that will always guide us to what's going to be in everyone's best interest, highest interest?
That's correct. Because all the beings of light, all the great beings of light, for all of humanity, are all working together on that higher level. So that when we tune in and we ask, always we must ask, you know, what is the best for all concerned? Show me what is the best for all concerned, because that gets the ego out of the way. You know, because and we can't know. Only the ego thinks it can know what is best for all concerned. but that's not true. As in our personality cells, we cannot know what is best for all concerned, but our higher self is talking to all the other higher selves, and they do know what's best for all concerned.
Yeah, so would that would explain then, so presumably that means that we might be thinking that it's in the best interest of all if somebody, you know, one of our family or loved ones, we're helping them, but maybe their higher self needs them not to have help. Or is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yes, exactly. That's so good. You know, are you familiar with the Carlos Castaneda books?
I've never actually read any, but I mean, I'm aware of them, and Wayne Dyer refers to him a lot. He was one of his teachers, wasn't he?
Yes. And so, well, Carlos' teacher was a shaman named Don Juan.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and Don Juan, one of the stories from there, I think it's so great, that stuck with me over all these years, is that they're watching a caterpillar crossing the road, a big highway, and the caterpillar is crossing, it takes such a long time, and it's so slow, and all of a sudden a great big, semi-truck is heading toward down the road, and it's most definitely going to crush the caterpillar.
Right.
And Don Juan rushes out into the road to grab the caterpillar, and Don Juan stops him and says, the caterpillar has taken this long to get across the road. If you pick him up and save him, he's got to start back on the far side of the road and come here again. If you leave him where he is, his next incarnation, he'll start right here and go forward. So when we're always trying to take, to, you know, so So when we want to step in and save somebody, a lot of times we have to step back and let them learn, let them do their life learning.
Yes, that's a really tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, sure is.
That is a really tough one.
Especially with our kids. Especially with our kids. I mean, of course, we have to protect them, from bodily harm and from any psychological, abuse or anything while they're children. But once they get grown up, we have to. That's the hardest thing I found.
How many children do you have?
I only have one.
You have one, and
I have one grown son. Yes.
And have you found that difficult?
It's been so difficult. Especially because I'm a spiritual teacher and I'm an intuitive and an empath and I can see. A lot of the times I can see exactly what's deeply right for him, But, a few years ago, he found a mentor and a spiritual teacher that he could go to. And I went, oh, good.
Yeah.
You go to her, and when he'd call up and say, what am I going to do about this? I'd say, call Susan.
Yeah, that's right. Well, isn't that the truth, though, Barbara? The one thing I've learned is that, Jesus said that as well, you can't teach in your own family, and a teacher can't teach in his own town even,
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And I think that's so true. I think that's one of the truths of this spiritual journey. But like you said, it is difficult, and I think that especially if you see them heading for pain, and I remember I went to see a shamanic teacher healer down in Colorado, I guess somewhere. Where was that? I think I probably told you about Dawn Eagle Woman. Did I tell you about Dawn?
Oh yes, I remember. Yes.
You know, where is she? She's in.
I'm trying to remember where she. You told me she was maybe Wyoming.
Laramie. Laramie is.
Yes. That's Wyoming, right?
Yeah, around that area.
Oh, look at how! But I've got a mind like a steel trap.
That's right. And I remember she said to me one day. She said to me, John, your children will demand the right to their pain, and you better not interfere with them having it.
Yeah.
And that was a very, very wise, phrase in the way. And, I kind of chewed it around my head for a while, and I really got the understanding and the wisdom of that, But it's so tough, like you said. It's so tough.
Oh, so tough.
I think it comes back to that thing, Barbara, is that our only job is to heal ourselves.
That's right. That is so right. The more we heal ourselves, then we just become, we just emanate that healing out, and that helps the entire world, because it's just a vibration that's coming. A healed person, everything that's healthy vibrates healthy, and that helps the whole planet vibrate health in a more healthy way.
Now, so let's talk a little bit, if we may. I'd love you to explain to our listeners about this Money is Love, because I remember reading the book and being totally blown away and understanding a lot of it, but it was in pretty early days of my understanding the power of thought and all the rest of it,
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you, but I still have not won that lottery, Barbara, it has been the biggest challenge, because with our very personal things we shared on the workshop and that my money business was not the most kosher in the world when I was in the oil industry and that. And since that time, it's like, my goodness me, it has been the biggest up until now. I have to put that in, because I always want to be open to changing it, but it has been the biggest challenge I've had is trying to live in the spiritual and, you know, get plenty of the green stuff as well. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about
well,
this.
And,
you know, I think a lot of people, I think when I listen to people to on the spiritual, have woken up, committed to the spiritual path, I think this is not an unusual situation. I think it's probably one of the biggest challenges and that's facing people who are committed to a spiritual path.
Well, it is. It is. And one of the reasons for that is that over the past 2,000 years in Western culture and 2,500 years in Eastern culture, starting with Buddha in the East and Christ the religions that follow that came from them. But there's been this idea, and we've been holding it was part of what we needed to learn was that to be spiritual, and to be, you know, living a spiritual life meant you lived a life of poverty. And the impoverished monks and the impoverished, you know, on both sides of the world, and the beggars with the rice bowls in the East, and that was because we had moved into an era where we had disconnected, and this was all right because we needed to. Because everything is in evolution. We had disconnected from the spirituality that was connected to the earth. And we had moved into spirituality that was connected with the heavens. And we had moved God from the goddess, moved our focus from the goddess in the earth, which is the abundance of all, where everything comes from the earth and from the and we had put it all up into the heavens, when we disconnected there, we suddenly lost the connection of the spirituality of all that the beautiful magnanimous earth has to offer us, and we went through this 2,500 year period of poverty, if you were spiritual. So then, having money sort of moved into the place, and which you were party to, and many others of getting money came from not the spiritual life. Getting money, if you were not connected to the heavens and suffering, then you had to get money somehow, and so a lot of getting money came from either struggling and working hard and nose to the grindstone and killing yourself to get money, or being in crime.
Yeah,
and of course, the Catholic Church became one of, you know, the great criminals of all time.
criminal in its widest sense of the word, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so now, as we're moving back into, or not back, but forward into this new era of spirituality, we are starting to reconnect with the earth and with the spirit of the earth. And the spirit of the earth is very feminine. And what is, you know, the feminine is the nurturer, right? The feminine is what nurtures, and nurturing means taking care of, giving all that's needed for life on the earth. But it's a new way. It's our new way, and we have to shift our mindset from this idea, because we created this idea. The whole human race, collective consciousness, decided that there was only a certain amount of money and that everybody had to fight to get their little piece of it, which, of course, it all creates great separation, and it causes war, it causes anger, it causes all kinds of low-frequency feelings and experiences in the world. I mean, look at the Iraq War as a perfect example, you know, because it's all based on, you know, some people wanting to get all the money from the oil and other people, you know, not wanting to give it.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
And so we get in, so we have to get out of that, to get out of that old mindset. We have to start to understand that there, that money isn't finite. That there isn't just this one little pile of money that we all have to fight for. Because all money really is energy.
Yeah.
And energy is limitless. And it's just our limited way of thinking that we created this idea that money is scarce.
Yeah.
And if we can change our mindset, and to do this, on the front cover of the book, and it's not written in the book because I didn't understand this until I created the cover of the book. And of course, but the front cover of the book is a beautiful picture of the Chinese goddess Kuan Yin, who is the goddess of compassion. And she's holding a Chinese coin close to her heart. And what that picture represents is that she's taking the money out of the world and into her heart of compassion, and transforming it into compassion and bringing it back out into the world.
Yeah.
And as we bring compassion to ourselves and compassion into our money at the same time, and then give it back into the world, we become that goddess. So that we begin to change our thinking and our feeling, and it's much more than thinking. It has to get down into the feeling, emotional, sensory level of feeling that money is here to support us, to take care of us, and then it flows constantly through the world, and that we take it into our hearts, into our lives. We transform it with our thoughts, our feelings, our love, and give it back into the world with love. And that will make, it will simply, the more we do that, the more it shifts within us, and we begin to understand that money is just always flowing.
Yeah.
We're always flowing. We're always taken care of. But that's the tricky part. Because we haven't made it to that place where the whole consciousness of the planet has shifted to that, because we are being in the process of doing that, of bringing that forth, right? And we still believe that we have to go out and get our pile and save it and invest it and make it grow and get several million dollars so we can feel safe and secure. And that's the old paradigm. And when we're in a when we've moved into a spiritual life, we have committed to leaving the old paradigm. And that means we're going to have to move up into this trust and new belief system that there is enough for us and for everyone, and that we have to trust that it keeps flowing in and through our lives, and we are always taken care of as exactly the way our higher self wants to take care of us. And that
Okay. So here I want to come in and ask a question, and I want to get a clarification.
Sure.
This is great stuff, and you know, I just wanted to say, if any of our listeners want to call in and speak to Barbara, please do so. The numbers are there right there on the screen. On your internet, you can call in and ask Barbara anything you'd like, or myself. So I'd just like to see if there's anybody out there that wants to come in and ask you anything. And while they're calling in, I'll just ask this question, Barbara. If that's the case, then, do you believe that it could be, for example, that that our higher self, in some cases, deemed that in this lifetime that somebody, you know, has to be, you know, in poverty?
I think, yes, on one level, yes. The answer is yes. We have lots of different lessons we learn, and we go through lots of different things in our lives, in our lifetimes to learn. And money is one of our greatest spiritual teachers, whether we have a lot of it or a little of it. It teaches us if we listen.
Yeah.
Right? And, or if we don't listen. We're forced to. It forces us because it is what supports us. We can't get the basics of life without money on this planet.
Yeah.
But the more we shift into this new way of understanding that we can all be supported, and that the entire way that we live on the planet will change, and we will lift up into people not having to be in dire poverty. But people don't have to be in. We have to come to balance. You see, there's no
balance. Yeah, right. That's it. So in other words, okay. That explains that, because I know in my own case, one thing that has shifted with me is I absolutely have no attachment to ownership anymore. That's a big change in me. That means, does it mean I don't enjoy living in a nice home? No, of course not. I do enjoy living in a nice home. I like nice things, and I enjoy being able to travel, and I enjoy all those kind of things. But the one big shift in me is I have no attachment, for some reason or other, to owning anything anymore.
Wow.
And that was something that I noticed. And in fact, today I actually don't own anything apart from a laptop and my clothes, you know.
Yes, so. You know. I mean, owning ties us down for one thing, and for another thing, how can we own anything? The earth is here for us to all share.
Yeah. You exactly. know, I doesn't I, belong to us anyway.
I always, until just a few years ago, I had never even owned a house. I'd always rented and never thought a thing about it. And now I own a house, and I wish I didn't own a house, because it's, you know, I can't sell a house. The market's flat. But I always, wherever I rented, I always fixed up the house. I painted it. I put beautiful things in. You know, I made take care of the garden. And I remember somebody coming up to me one day and saying, "Well, why are you taking care of the garden? You don't own this house." And I said, "Well, because it's the garden. Because
exactly.
it's the earth.
Yeah.
We all share
well,
this
and
together.
Where you're living, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And where I live has to be beautiful. It's very important to me. The beauty is very important to me. But you don't have to spend a fortune to have beauty.
No, and you don't have to own it.
That's right. You certainly don't have to own it.
Yeah, so, I don't know if there's any callers on the line at the moment, but it is this thing. So what, do you run courses then in this kind of thing now, Barbara? Or
I do. I teach here at my center in Boulder, which is the Transformational Light Center. I have a weekend course coming up this weekend.
Money is love course? Or?
Right, it is. Okay. And I teach it everywhere. I teach it online. I do teleclasses, not online, on the telephone. And I teach all over the country, and just recently started working with a student in Nepal, and I'm going to bring him here, and then I'll be going back there. After
you haven't quite got into the White House yet, right?
I've not got into the White House.
Maybe if Hillary gets in, you'll get in there.
Yes, I think so.
But you know what's interesting? What I find interesting, and I'd like to explore this with you, because I think when we spoke earlier that you mentioned...
I heard somebody other... Did I hear another voice just then?
John, it's Esther on the line here.
Oh, hi, Esther.
It's Esther from Victoria.
Wow, hi, Esther. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Welcome to the show. Did you have a question for Barbara?
Yes, I'm enjoying this very much, and it's very appropriate for me right now because, you know, I've got this wonderful business that I'm involved in, and it's something that I feel really fits with my spiritual work, my intention to be here to support people in their conscious evolution. So it's my dilemma is, do I set goals for achieving success in this business? And if I don't, am I copping out? Is it a fear of money that causes me not to set goals when really my heart says all I want to do is share this with people, do something that helps other people, and allow the money to come in as it comes in? Can you comment on that for me?
Sure. First of all, I'm really moving away from using the word goals. I'm moving more into using the word intention. Because when we make it something our intention, that sort of calls a gentler, more all embracing help from the universe. I've noticed. And you want to start looking at what do you truly want? What is the desire of your soul? Begin to tune in to your soul's desire, and begin to reform your ideas, your way you verbalize what it is your intentions are. Because yes, you do. My sense is yes, you do want to share this, and you do also want to live and be in balance. And to be in balance, you have to get back as much as you put out. That's something that we really forget, is that we're constantly thinking we have to give and give and give, but we also have to be open to receive. So as much as you wish to share and in your company with your clients, and the more you also want to open to receive back equally, and then you move into the flow. Does that help you?
Yeah. So I missed something because I wasn't able to hear you quite clearly, and it was the part about goals. So if I just do my business from day to day, from a heart-centered place, then I'm not copping out if I'm not setting financial goals?
No, what I said about goals was, let's change the language from goals to intentions, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And then start to look for start to tune into how much energy you're putting out into the world, and open up to take back that amount of energy back in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if money is energy,
right.
You want to bring back money to pay you for what you are giving, so that it becomes a balance.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to that old paradigm goal setting of, I'm going to make this much money, my company's going to grow to this size by this time, and because my sense is that's not working for us anymore. It's old paradigm.
Right.
But your fear is blocking you from receiving equally and being in balance. Does that make sense to you?
Somebody interrupted and asked if I was connected with you guys yet. So
we're having quite a communications block of the energies.
So what? One of the things I'll just move on to, and that is that when I hear that how much energy I put out and how much I'm getting back, that brings up the concern of there used to be a thought that we had to work hard for our money.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense is now that that putting out energy is not necessarily working hard. It's that putting out the energy can be in many ways. We can put out energy by meditating and being in that place of love to help vibration. Does that fit for you?
Yes, that's right. The old Puritan belief system of, you work hard for them. There's a song about it, too.
Mm-hmm.
You work hard for your money. it's much more about being in your passion,
mm-hmm.
doing the work that is your passion, that fulfills you. Because as John and I were talking about a little earlier, it's about healing ourselves, right? Always about going back to taking care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we begin to vibrate so that it heals others, right?
The other day I was doing some really great coaching with some wonderful friends, and it felt that we were all in this incredible vibration and really growing, and there was nobody on the clock getting paid for that in that moment. But my sense is that is putting energy that will come back some other way, that it doesn't have to be I'm getting paid for this particular effort.
That is correct. But you also want to be really clear. You want to tune into, are you giving without being open to receive? Are you thinking you don't need to receive, that you can do it all and give it all, and you can live on air?
Mm.
Because that's really, and that's a very feminine thing, because women really have never been paid for what we do best, which is nurturing and taking care of and all of that. And we haven't opened that flow channel to be paid for our nurturing abilities.
And so is that shifting now?
Yes, and you want to be part of that shift.
Right.
And if you want to look at my book, Embracing Your Power, Woman.
Okay.
There's the chapter on true wealth, the power of true wealth. And it talks directly to that part about women. We're really good at nurturing. We're not good at living in the marketplace. We don't know that our nurturing work has any economic value, and we need to shift that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've been arguing that point for a long time.
Yeah.
my husband sold life insurance, and he would say to this couple, well, you need to have this much life insurance, because if your wife dies, it's going to cost you this much to raise your family. And I said to him, well, doesn't that not tell you what my economic value is?
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Barbara, and thank you, John, for hosting this call.
Okay, Esther, thank you for listening in. It's just great to know that you're listening in and enjoying the show. And it's great to have you on.
Okay, great.
Bye-bye, Esther.
Right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye, Esther. God bless. Well, that was a beautiful surprise, Barbara. This is a woman who my wife Mary and I worked with on a spiritual retreat center in Bowen Island off the west coast of Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
So it's great to know that people are tuning in. And I think if I remember rightly, I gave her a copy of the book because I had a whole bunch of them,
Uh-huh.
But that was great she called in.
That's wonderful.
And I was coming on to the concept of money and Course in Miracles. Of course, as you're aware, because I think you said that you studied the course, or you used to study the course.
I'm very aware of the course because I for 5 years I went to a Unity church, and everybody everything is
into the course.
And
of course, what the course says, you know, what the course says, and I really like the course because it all makes sense to me. It ticks all the boxes for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that once we understand that there is, you know, there is. Spirit is spirit. There is nothing which is in physical form which is spirit, because otherwise it wouldn't be spirit. It's like an oxymoron, you know. But it says, it doesn't say that there's anything wrong in having abundance and all the rest of it. But I think the point it's coming to is that everything starts within, you know, that the outer world is only like that's on the screen of life, and that whereas people, most of us, me included, spent most of our lives facing the wrong way. You know, I kept trying to change everything out there on the screen instead of going to the projector.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then, once you know, you change the projector, you change your experience. And it could be that the outer picture may not appear that good, but it's by doing the inner work so that you don't get shunted around from fear all the time, you know, shunted into fear. I think that's the part that the course is trying to get through.
Exactly. I mean, the fear blocks everything.
Yeah.
Fear blocks love. Anger actually blocks the flow of money.
Yeah.
And anger, of course, comes out of fear. Every negative emotion comes out of fear. It's all fear.
Yeah.
But our anger, we go around and we get stuck in righteous indignation. You know, and that blocks the flow. That blocks our flow instantly. And when we're very righteously indignant about how the planet, how the ecology is being destroyed and the global warming, and we're righteously indignant about that, we're righteously indignant about how the government is performing, and we're righteously indignant about the war. All of that's built. It doesn't mean that we accept it. It means that we bring it into the light. Hold in the light and step outside of it and not become part of it. And let
yeah, that's it, yeah. But I totally agree and I totally understand that one, and, you know, I am having to continually watch myself. I'm pretty happy with how I am now on an individual basis with individuals, where I have to watch myself when it comes to institutions like the government or the police or, you know, this kind of stuff. But the course explains it brilliantly, you know, by saying that whatever judgmental thought you have is going straight into your own unconscious mind and is going to come back at you sooner or later. And it might not come back in the same form. It might not come back the same time. There could be a delay. But, of course, the good side is the converse. Is all the time we're practicing forgiveness and quantum forgiveness, where, you know, understanding that there's nothing to forgive. That also is the higher self or Holy Spirit is healing and it's going to, you know, have a positive effect, you know, sooner or later. So I think that's basically it. Barbary, I cannot believe. I mean, this has been such fun, and we're already up to time almost. Now, what I wanted you to do, could you let the listeners know about the title of your books and your website, and if they can contact you in any way, please give out your information if you could.
Oh, I certainly will. It certainly has been wonderful being here with you, John. Just warm feelings of reconnection. My books are Money is Love, Reconnecting to the Sacred Origins of Money, and Embracing Your Power, Woman, 11 Steps to Coming of Age in Midlife. My website is www.barbarawilder.com. And on my website has all my contact information. There's also some lovely meditations and prayers on the website, and articles and essays, and you can also sign up for my newsletter, and I send out a newsletter about once a month, an essay about on some new spiritual idea that I'm working with, and always a meditation, along with letting you know what I'm up to in the world, workshop wise and traveling. So please visit www.barbarawilder.com, and you can buy my books there. And My Money Is Love is on CD now too. And
wonderful. That is great news, because that's what I wanted. It wasn't on CD when we first met. I know that.
That's correct.
So I'll definitely get a copy of that, because that's a great way. I love to learn. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for giving of yourself. You're a wonderful being of light, and I certainly find it's great to reconnect with you, because we haven't been in contact for some time. But I always think, you know, once you make connection with people, the contact is there, and it's just at different levels. And it's been great having you on the show. I wish you every success in 2008 onwards, and I certainly hope to connect with you in the physical, and for you to get together and meet my beautiful wife, Mary, who is a real being of light, and I think she'll be interested in your second book as well. So thank you, Barbara, and have a wonderful, wonderful 2008.
You too, John. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Barbara. Take care. God bless you. Bye-bye.